without grace are limited, whereas gifts with grace are lasting. Hello everyone, I'm McDaniel Phillips, and this is Times of Refreshing, a ministry of Bethesda Hall in partnership with TWR Asia. Our host is author, teacher, and itinerant speaker, Kenneth Wong. You know, one of the best known and widely used passages from the Bible is the 13th chapter from Paul's first letter to the Corinthians. This chapter is popularly used in wedding ceremonies. In 13 short verses, Paul captures the essence of what love is and what love is not. However, this chapter is often simply lifted out of the pages of Scripture and presented as a standalone item. But how does this chapter relate to grace in light of the Corinthian church? With more on that, here's Ken with Love's the Greatest.
Hello, friends. It's really good to be with you once again. We are going to consider a very well-loved subject. It's the subject of love. But we are going to consider what the Bible has to say about true love. That is love from a divine standpoint, God's point of view. The great chapter on love in the New Testament, in fact the whole Bible, is in 1 Corinthians chapter 13. It's a well-known chapter. And you can say it's Paul's magnum opus or masterpiece on the subject of love. 1 Corinthians 13 is one of three great thematic chapters in the New Testament. The other two are Hebrews chapter 11 on faith, and in 1 Corinthians again, chapter 15 on hope, that is hope of the resurrection. That's something useful to note, and you can read them at your own time. But it's particularly relevant because the very last verse of the chapter that we are going to consider in 1 Corinthians 13, verse 13, it mentions these three things. And now abide faith, hope, love, these three. But the greatest of these is love. So we have a whole chapter majoring on faith in Hebrews 11, another great chapter majoring on the hope of the resurrection in 1 Corinthians 15, and this chapter in 1 Corinthians 13, majoring on love. It is interesting to note that the chapter on love here in 1 Corinthians 13 is the shortest of the trio. And yet, in 1 Corinthians 13:13, it ends by saying that the greatest of these is love. There's nothing clearer or more categorical than that, which is the reason why I have entitled this Love's the Greatest. It's not an arbitrary title, but from the summary statement at the end of this great chapter on love in 1 Corinthians 13. Now let us study in greater detail this wonderful portrait of the greatness of love in the 13 lucid verses of 1 Corinthians chapter 13. Let's look at the first three verses. They deal with lacking in love. Why do I say that? It's because we have this phrase, have not love, used three times in these three verses. And as I read them to you, I would like you to take note of them. 1 Corinthians 13 verse 1. Though I speak with the tongues of men and of angels, but have not love, I have become sounding brass or a clanging cymbal. Verse 2. And though I have the gift of prophecy and understand all mysteries and all knowledge, and though I have all faith so that I could remove mountains, but have not love, I am nothing. Verse 3. And though I bestow all my goods to feed the poor, and though I give my body to be burned, but have not love, it profits me nothing. Clearly, lacking in love or have not love is the key point in the first three verses. And they are spoken in connection with various examples of spiritual gifts. We have to see that chapter 13 of 1 Corinthians on love is like the meat in the middle of a sandwich between the two chapters of 13 and 14, which major on spiritual gifts. And the big point here that we should see is that love is not peripheral, but central to the right use and exercise of spiritual gifts. The great imperative of the right exercise of spiritual grace gifts in the church is that they should be exercised through love. It's most interesting to observe that this chapter is bookended by a reference to spiritual gifts at either end. In the last verse of the previous chapter, chapter 12, verse 31, it says, "But earnestly desire the best gifts, and yet I show you a more excellent way." And the other book end is when we begin chapter 14 in verse 1, which says, "Pursue love and desire spiritual gifts." So this whole chapter on love is just preceded by and followed by a specific reference to the desire for spiritual gifts. So that's a good thing to have, a right and a holy desire for spiritual gifts, but it should be accompanied by the grace or the love with which to use it effectively. Notice also that in both this preceding verse as well as in the following verse, refer to love as a way. The last verse 31 of chapter 12 says, "I show you a more excellent way." And verse 1 of chapter 14 says, "Pursue love," implying pursue the way of love. So love is a way of life that is befitting of followers of the way, as the early church and Christians were called. And what a way that is. It's a most excellent way. It's the greatest thing that we can have. So go for the greatest if you have eyes to see. Don't be satisfied with the lesser. The 17th century English theologian John Owen remarked that it is possible to have gifts without the graces, which is what sometimes some people do when they just focus on chapters 12 and 14 without chapter 13 of 1 Corinthians. We have to read them as a connected and integrated whole and unit. And the way we read and understand scriptures will inevitably determine the way we apply it and live it out. So remember, gifts without grace are limited, whereas gifts with grace are lasting. By all means, earnestly desire and go for the best gifts, as we're exhorted. But make sure you know the way of exercising them rightly. And this chapter shows us the more excellent way, the greatest way of love, that we may apply it and practice it rightly. When we read love is the greatest, or it is the more or most excellent way, it means that love is unequaled. It's unrivaled, it's incomparable, there is nothing like it. In Paul's epistle to the Colossians in chapter 3, verse 14, he says, "But above all these things, put on love, which is the bond of perfection." Is it any wonder why he should say this? Above everything else, don't neglect this. You may be doing many other things, but this is one thing you must do. Put on love, which is the bond of perfection. It's the powerful glue that will keep everything perfectly fitted, both in your own life and in your relations with others. Back to our first three verses in 1 Corinthians 13. The key point here is that without love, we are nothing and we are of no use, no matter what the spiritual gift may be. And there are three that are cited which may be regarded as representative of wider categories. In verse 1, we have, "Though I speak with the tongues of men and of angels, but have not love, I am become sounding brass or a clanging cymbal." This represents the category of speaking gifts. Verse 2, "Though I have the gift of prophecy and understand all mysteries and all knowledge, and though I have all faith." These represent the category of what may be called sensing gifts. And then in the third verse, "Though I bestow all my goods to feed the poor, though I give my body to be burned, but have not love, it profits me nothing," representing the category of serving gifts. So these are some samples that are cited to represent speaking gifts, sensing gifts, and serving gifts in general. Paul is here making use of contrasts in the form of all or nothing. His line of reasoning is couched in these words: "If or though I have these gifts, but if I have not love, then I'm nothing. They count for nothing." So you can say this is a hypothetical line of reasoning. He's making use of the literary method of hyperbole, which is a deliberate exaggeration to create the effect. The force of his logic in the argument is that although I have any gift in good measure, but not love, then it amounts to nothing. Without love, spiritual gifts are ineffective and next to useless. This may be compared with the common and well-known mathematical relation that when you multiply anything, no matter how big that quantity is, if you multiply it by nothing, that's what you will get, nothing. Love is the great multiplier, And if you do not have love, then you will have nothing as the multiplier. And the result will be, you get nothing. Nothing matters. Nothing counts. However gifted you may be, it all amounts to nothing. That's his argument in a nutshell. So the key question then is, not what gift do you have, but how you are exercising your gift. Measure the grace quotient rather than the gift quotient. Because spiritual gifts are really grace gifts. That's what they really mean. They are given entirely by grace, and in the same way, they have to be exercised with grace and love. Love is commonly associated with the fruit of the Spirit, which Paul talks about at length in Galatians chapter 5, verses 22 and 23. But the fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, long-suffering, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, self-control. The singular fruit of the Spirit manifests itself through love in its different forms. So gifts of the Spirit are only edifying when they are exercised with the fruit of the Spirit. Spiritual gifts without spiritual fruit lead to spiritual pride. A gift exercised with the wrong spirit is a most dangerous and destructive thing. And that is why it can have a disastrous effect both for that person as well as for others, when it is done to gratify self rather than to glorify God. So these first three verses deal with the subject of lacking in love. Let us move on to the next four verses, from verse 4 to verse 7. And they deal with acting in love. Having been made aware of the dangers of lacking in love, Paul now moves on to consider in specific detail what it means to be acting in love. This is the meat, the main section, which gives us a portrait or a personification of love in active terms. A very good and practical way to read this section is to substitute the word love with a personal pronoun like I or me. And that will help me to check if it is present in my life. It helps me to personalize the application. While reading, it is also helpful to look at Jesus as the perfect model of love, lest we should get overwhelmed by what seems to be a theoretical ideal. It is not beyond us when Christ is in us. These four verses contain the best and the most lucid description of what love is in all of Scripture as well as in all of literature. And that's because it describes the highest form of love, which is divine love. It's the love of God working in us and through us to manifest the love of neighbor. In the biblical Greek, the word agape is often used to describe God's kind of love, and that's characterized by self-giving and by being unconditional, that is, it's undeserved. We didn't do anything to merit or to deserve it. It's just freely and unconditionally given to us. This is in contrast to the world's or man's idea of love, which is represented by another Greek word which is not used in the Bible, and it's eros. In contrast to agape, which is self-giving, eros is self-gratifying. It's the kind of love that gives, but only in order to get something for itself. What we're going to consider next, in the four verses from 4 to 7, comprise a 15-point inventory made up with 7 positive and 8 negative aspects of practical love. The 7 positive aspects deal with what love does, and the 8 negative aspects with what love does not do. So together, they tell us in very practical terms what acting in love is like, or what lacking in love looks like. This provides a checklist for situations where love may be put to the test. It doesn't really tell us how to do it, but it does tell us what it is or what it is not. And practically, we learn to love by being put into situations with people where we need to act in love. Always remember that we can learn both from the loving as well as from those who are unloving. We can learn both from the positive as well as the negative. We learn to love in one of three ways. First, by being loved by others, that's by receiving. And then we also learn by observing how others love, that's watching. And finally, we learn to love by loving others ourselves, and that's by practicing. So bear these in mind as we go through each one of the 15-point portrait of practical love. Let's begin with verse 4, which reads, "Love suffers long and is kind. Love does not envy. Love does not parade itself, is not puffed up." In this single verse, there are 5 points included, and let's deal with them one at a time. First on the list is patience, and this is a positive aspect. Love suffers long, or love is patient in some other versions. The word here for long-suffering or patience is literally to be long-tempered, which is something we never hear about. We often hear about being short-tempered. And if you understand what being short-tempered means, you will have a pretty good idea of what the opposite of that means, to be long-tempered. Instead of a short fuse, as we sometimes say, you have a long fuse, so long that the spark fizzles out before it gets a chance to explode. Patience and long-suffering should characterize our attitudes and actions towards others who are slower or less able than ourselves, or those who treat us unreasonably or disrespectfully. And the opposite of patience is impatience. Impatience is dominated and driven by my own perspective. Let me share with you this poignant reminder, which I can never forget, which may be helpful for you too. It's a slogan that was written on the back of a private ambulance as I was driving a little impatiently behind it. The words glared at me from the back of the ambulance. It said, "More patience, less patience." More patience of the kind that we're talking about here, so that there will be less of the kind that the ambulances take, the casualties. How true that is in our dealings with others. Without the patience of love, we can leave a trail of destruction behind us, no matter how gifted we may be or well-intentioned. The second aspect is kindness, which is also a positive aspect. This is again self-explanatory. It says in verse 4, "Love suffers long and is kind." So love is patient, love is kind towards those who need your help, those who are dependent on you, even though they may not deserve it. That's what it means to be kind or merciful to others. Not everyone needs it all the time. But when kindness or mercy is due, do we give it and show it, or do we do the opposite, which is to be hard and without compassion or tenderness? So a loving person is a kind person. The third point is a negative aspect, and we may call this envy. In verse 4, it is put this way, "Love does not envy." This means being unable to take or to accept others doing better than ourselves, especially those who are our peers or who are near to us. When we love ourselves very much, when we are very self-important in our own eyes, envy has a very insidious way of popping up again and again. We may not like to admit it, but it's there, and we know it. The love of self becomes so dominant that it cripples love and prevents us from truly appreciating others, not only when they are good and kind to us, but also when they are doing well or even better than us. And once again, it's quite helpful for each case to consider its opposite. The opposite and the antidote to envy is really contentment. We are grateful for all that we have and that we are, so that we can be truly grateful and thankful for others as well. Number 4 on our list is also a negative aspect, and we may call this boastfulness. In verse 4 of 1 Corinthians 13, it is described this way, "Love does not parade itself." What does parading suggest? It's to show off. It's to call attention to yourself. Unlike envy, when others may be better than ourselves, in this case, self is put above others, and sometimes even at their expense. But love does not behave in that way. So beware of attention-seeking and bragging. Instead, focus on the opposite of boastfulness, which is humility. And that is a very powerful and positive manifestation of love. Genuine love is humble. And number 5 on our list is also a negative aspect. It's pride. And this is described at the end of verse 4 as follows. Love is not puffed up. When something is puffed up or inflated, it looks much bigger than it really is in substance. There's just a lot of hot air. And this is what a puffed up and inflated ego usually is. Boastfulness is a particular manifestation of pride, and pride is the heart of self-centeredness. Although a person may not be outwardly boastful, that person can be inwardly self-important, arrogant, and conceited. You may not be a show-off, but you can be a snob. And a loving person is neither a show-off nor a snob. We're going to stop at the first five today and continue tomorrow. But I think we can already see quite clearly that love from the divine standpoint is so much more than we normally make it out to be. And I trust this has been a refreshing time for you spent around the Word of God.
A gift exercised with a wrong spirit is a most dangerous and destructive thing, especially when done to gratify self rather than glorify God. Thank you, Kenneth. This is Times of Refreshing, a ministry of Bethesda Hall in partnership with TWR Asia. And I invite you to join us again tomorrow when Kenneth Wong presents part two of Love's the Greatest. Now, we would love to hear from you. We hope that you have a comment for us on the program. We always want to know what you're thinking and whether you are appreciating what Ken is sharing. You can send him a text message. That phone number is 9431-3813. Or if you would rather put pen to paper, then here is the mailing address. Post Office Box 392, Thompson Road Post Office, Singapore 915-714. We have a Facebook page. I hope you've had a chance to go and visit and to see what others are saying about the program. Maybe you could also take some time and leave your own views right on our Facebook page. I also invite you to visit our website, www.timesofrefreshing.asia, where you can listen to the program online. And Times of Refreshing also has an iPhone app that you can download. And when you do, you'll be able to directly access the broadcast messages and the podcasts right from your iPhone. I'm McDaniel Phillips, inviting you to join us again for Times of Refreshing.